even though Europe is not producing the kind of big tech champion companies, they are sort of a leader when it comes to regulation.
Hello and welcome to the Hopkins Podcast on Foreign Affairs. My name is Leo Kamer, and I am joined by my co-host, Zach Wheeler. As conversation abounds regarding the increasing power of large technology companies, or big tech, Europe may be the first to take action. In late March, the governing bodies of the European Union came to an agreement on the Digital Markets Act, which, from what we can tell, would force large tech companies to undergo changes with the hope of fostering competition and improving the user experience. In this episode, we will discuss the purpose of this antitrust legislation and how effective it will be in regulating big tech. We will also touch on how the consumer experience may change and whether other countries will follow suit and adopt similar legislation. In order to explain the Digital Markets Act, joining us today on the podcast is Adam Satariano.
Adam Satariano is a technology correspondent for the New York Times based in Europe, where his work focuses on digital policy and the intersection of technology and world affairs. His coverage has included the spread of disinformation, the growing use of censorship and surveillance technologies, the attempts by governments to police internet speech, and Europe's efforts to regulate global tech giants. We hope you enjoy this episode of the Hopkins Podcast on Foreign Affairs.
Adam, thank you for joining us today on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
To get started, when announcing the Digital Markets Act, member of the European Parliament Andreas Schwab remarked that it, and I quote, puts an end to the ever-increasing dominance of big tech companies. Can you explain to our listeners what the Digital Markets Act is and its main purpose?
So it helps to think about the largest tech platforms like as something like a walled fortresses. They each have their own fiefdoms of dominance, like Apple has the iPhone and App Store. Google has search and Android and advertising, Amazon and e-commerce, Facebook and social media, et cetera. And each of these companies have become sort of economies into themselves. What I mean by that is that other businesses depend on them to reach customers and to do businesses. And the companies have sort of set up their own policies or laws by which other companies need to follow to be able to reach the customers. And so what this law is attempting to do is open up these fortresses in some meaningful ways. And by doing that, you know, European policymakers believe that it'll give smaller companies a better chance to compete. And so there's different ways in which they try and do that. Each sort of affect the biggest companies in different ways. So I think of like how Apple manages the App Store will be affected, how Amazon sells some services on its website will be affected. Google's will have to share some data related to search and advertising and so on. And so the hope is that over time, the policymakers want to see, you know, more companies being able to emerge and to compete with these big companies. And of course, that remains a big open question of whether or not they'll be successful at doing that.
So you mentioned a few companies like Apple and Google. Who is defined as big tech in the act? So which companies will be affected by its provisions?
The Digital Markets Act defines the gatekeeper platforms is what they say. And they don't name any company specifically, but it's pretty clear who they're targeting. And so these are companies that have a market value of more than 75 billion euros, which works out to 83 or so billion dollars. And then other metrics to classify as well. So this is a group that includes Alphabet, which owns Google and YouTube, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, Facebook, or now Meta. So that's the classification that they're using.
And Adam, I'm wondering if you could walk us kind of through the process that the Digital Markets Act has taken through the EU and then kind of where it is in the cycle of legislation. At what point will it actually become law?
Yeah, so I moved to Europe about 5-6 years ago, and I'm still learning the finer points of the European Union lawmaking process. But in general, so this has gone remarkably fast by their standards. So they sort of got this through from start to finish in basically 16 months, which is for them pretty remarkable. And so it started with a proposal that is written by the European Commission, which is the kind of executive branch of the European Union. And so they come up with a what serves as a baseline proposal, like here's what we think the European Union should do to address what has been identified as a problem. So market competition and digital economy is a problem. Here's how we think you can fix it. Then it goes to the European Parliament. They are much more of a political body representing with representatives from all over the European Union. And they come up with their own idea. And then there's another body called the European Council, which is made up of representatives from each member state, which is sort of the heads of each member state. So, the president of France will have a representative in Germany and so on. And they will come up with ideas. And they can stick very close to what the European Commission has recommended, or they can veer off in other directions. Here they kept pretty close. And then they come together, the Parliament and the European Commission, the Parliament and the European Council come together, almost like in the US, how you have conference committees, like the House and the Senate will get together and they'll put their heads together and bash their heads together to try to reach a compromise on a bill. And sometimes that can drag on and on and on and on to the point that nothing ever gets passed into law. And other times it can move very quickly. And this is an instance where there was pretty broad agreement on what they wanted to do. And so it moved fairly quickly.
And just to follow up on that, Adam, I'm wondering if, is there kind of insight into when the law may come into effect at this point?
Yeah, so there's a couple largely ceremonial steps that need to be done. The European Parliament needs to officially pass it. And then there is a sort of a grace period where everyone can get themselves ready for this to take effect. And this one they think could take effect as early as by the end of the year or early next year.
Let's dig into the specifics of the act a little bit. What are the major agreed upon provisions that we see in the act?
Yeah, so they have not released specific text of this yet. So what we know is what has been shared by people involved in the negotiations. And so there are a few, I think, main things that really jumped out at me. And so one is about essentially requiring a company like Google or Facebook to have to share more information with smaller competitors in certain areas, like in search advertising and some things like that. The specifics of how that is going to work in practice is unclear at this point. But the idea is that other internet companies would be able to have some sort of access to certain kinds of information. Other thing is involves an idea around interoperability, which is a really geeky word, but is important, and it centers around like messaging apps. And so if you are a user of WhatsApp and but there are other messaging apps that want to be able to, a user of another messaging app wants to be able to send a message to you, they might be able to do that if the company behind that smaller messaging app wants to participate or wants to work with WhatsApp. And so this is an example of like WhatsApp has long been this walled garden that Facebook, it's not open to other services to tap into, but now might be. Amazon, another thing that could happen is that Amazon could be prevented from prioritizing its own products that it makes and sells on its website. So Amazon, in addition to just having the main website, it also offers all sorts of products and basics, like from batteries to pants. And what the law says is that you cannot give yourself preferential treatment over a smaller company just because you are the owner of this platform. And that idea of sort of preferential treatment is really something that runs throughout. So if you, Apple, can't give your apps preferential treatment over somebody else, you, Apple, might have to be forced to offer an alternative app store to give somebody the opportunity to download another app store for getting apps. You won't be able to require another company to use your payment system, Apple. If I'm purchasing an app right now, it largely all goes through Apple's payment system. The European policymakers want to open that up. So it's a sort of chip away at trying to force these companies to open up.
How could we see these policies implemented and enforced once the act is passed? Do we have any idea how that might happen?
So enforcement's going to be is going to be key. I mean, the European Union has a tradition of unfortunately, I think, to its critics, of putting out, passing laws that look a lot tougher on paper than they do in practice. And the reason for that is they're often very difficult to enforce. So a few years ago, they enacted this very groundbreaking data privacy law called the General Data Protection Regulation. And the idea with that was to limit the ability of companies to collect and share data about their users. Many saw it as an instrument through which regulators in Europe would be able to push back against the practices of like Google, Facebook, and others. But it's largely been unenforced. There's little that has changed or happened as a result of it. And so that law is sort of seen as a cautionary tale. And I think some worry that that's what's going to happen here. The European Commission is going to be in charge of enforcing this. They're going to have to hire gobs of new people. A lot of this is going to be challenged in court in the years ahead. And so how much or how little this actually changes is a real important question.
Beyond the enforcement, let's say that the act is enforced fully somehow. What would then be the arguments for and against the act if it has full power? Has it received any significant criticism, or does it have broad public support?
In Europe, it's not top of mind of people that you're going to talk to on the street. I mean, the mechanics of what's happening in Brussels is not, you know, somebody in Paris is not going to have too much of an opinion about the Digital Markets Act. But I think what is fair to say is that Europeans have a great deal of suspicion about American tech platforms. And so in that regard, there's been wide political support and wide agreement among the political leadership across Europe to essentially do something. And this is what they've come up with. The criticism of this proposal is a lot of it comes from people who have either are at one of the companies themselves or who have ties to the tech industry. And essentially it's that this is a blunt instrument in that it lacks nuance and to address some pretty difficult problems, and that it could stunt innovation and the development of European businesses as well as existing businesses elsewhere and operating in Europe. And so that's sort of the criticism of it. So to use the example of like the messaging apps. So the idea, on the one hand, opening up messaging services sounds like a very good idea. It seems just like email. You know, if I use Gmail and you use Outlook, it doesn't matter. I can just send you a message. Why shouldn't a messaging app work the same? But on the other hand, it introduces a whole boast of security issues when a lot of apps use end-to-end encryption. And so what standards are put in place to ensure that you can protect encryption and people's privacy while also implementing this change? And so there's all these sort of thorny questions that still need to be worked out that I think some critics think that the policymakers didn't do enough of.
And Adam, you mentioned that the Digital Markets Act isn't exactly top of mind for your average person in the European Union, but the act will, as you've kind of already touched on, will have some major implications on how people use technology, at least in the European Union for now, in their day-to-day lives. I'm wondering if you could kind of expand on that a little bit, like what does it really look like from a consumer's perspective once this act passes? What changes for me as maybe a user of these technologies in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, that's a key question. And it's very hard to say because when the Data Privacy Act passed some time ago, there was a lot of belief that it would change the way that companies collected data about users and that it would sort of foster in this new era of internet usage that didn't require as much a collection of people's data. And that just hasn't been the case. And so I maintain a healthy amount of skepticism that everyday users are going to see a huge amount of change. I think there are going to be some effects that could potentially be significant. You know, reshaping how app stores work would be pretty a meaningful change. If you, as an iPhone owner, until now, the only way for you to download an app is through Apple's App Store. So if the European policymakers follow through in requiring Apple to open up new app stores, that could be a significant change. But that Apple would also say that presents new security risks because all of a sudden you could be able to download apps that don't have to go through Apple's approval process, which they say is more rigorous than others. You know, online advertising could change in that Google and Facebook, who now dominate that market, could have to open up a bit more and by share more information with competitors, which could lead to other companies emerging. Amazon, changes at Amazon could result in changes in the way that new products are sold online. And so those are, I think, what the policymakers would like to see is the sort of opening up and giving more room on the road for other businesses to emerge. But I think it's going to be a few years yet until we know whether or not they've succeeded.
That's really interesting, Adam. One thing I'm like just thought came to me now, and I'm wondering if maybe you could address a kind of example that I can think of that maybe most of our listeners would be very familiar with that could be affected by this act is Apple's kind of walled fortress around iMessage, and specifically how when you text an Android device, it's a green bubble as opposed to a blue bubble. Would a Digital Markets Act, could it potentially end that practice for users in Europe? Would there no longer be kind of green bubbles for Android users?
I have not thought of that. That's a great point. It could be. One thing you could see is that if I'm a user of a different messaging app, in theory, Signal, although I don't know if Signal would even want to do this, but then I could send you a message on your iMessage. And so the idea of having some sort of super messaging app is kind of interesting from a user's perspective. Like right now, I have, like, let me count. I have in front of me 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different messaging apps that I use. And is that necessary? Why can't I just have them all in one? And so that's the sort of an idea that the European policymakers think that they should force a company like Facebook, which owns WhatsApp, and Apple to have to do. I don't know if it's actually going to happen because a company like Signal would have to want to do that. I'm not sure that they would because it could compromise their security, but maybe some newer, smaller companies would want to try that. Maybe there'll be some sort of new apps that could be built on top of iMessage to do real-time translation. If you want to message with somebody in Germany or France, then you could use this plugin of some sort that could do translations for you. That would be kind of interesting. I would try that probably, depending on the level of security that I was looking for in that conversation. So it's that sort of thing that I think people could see some pretty interesting changes.
Right. And Adam, just to pivot a little bit, in your most recent or one of the more recent articles you wrote for the New York Times on the Digital Markets Act, you discussed how some academics have talked about the so-called Brussels effect, where basically I won't get ahead of myself. Could you kind of describe what is that Brussels effect and kind of what implications that might have for the Digital Markets Act kind of being used as a model around the world?
Yeah, so the Brussels effect is something that a Columbia law professor, Anu Bradford, came up with in a book of the same name. And the idea is that European regulation sets the standard for the rest of the world almost without trying. Like, European Union law doesn't necessarily change how a company has to operate in the United States. The rules of the European Union end at the borders of the European Union. But if you are a company operating in the European Union, it is often much easier to adopt the policies that are set there than to kind of have this fragmented business where you have a set of rules that you use in the European Union for the way that your service works, and then a different one for elsewhere in the world. So the idea is that Europe is sort of setting the bar that the rest of the world, as a result, has to follow. And there are some examples that is very true. Like, even though I've been knocking this data privacy law, GDPR, there's all sorts of like reporting and ways in which companies have had to change how they share information with users and things like that, which they've sort of adopted globally, as opposed to just leaving it isolated to the European Union. And so, the European Union has been really aggressive and fast moving in terms of setting new policies around technology and big technology companies. And the US has largely done nothing. And so as a result, they're sort of setting the pace of how companies operate. And the European Union is a massive, massive market for these companies. And so it makes a lot of sense for them to just adapt accordingly.
I'm sort of wondering, through all of this discussion, how have the companies that will be affected reacted to this act? Has there been any reaction?
They've kind of kept their heads down thus far, waiting to see, saying they want to wait and see what the text of it is. But make no mistake, I mean, in the months leading up to this, there was a very well-funded, concerted lobbying effort to try and to soften the blow of this law. I don't think any company was under any illusion that they would be able to stop this from passing, because there was so much political momentum around doing this. But there is an effort to, I think, weaken it, and I think they largely failed. I mean, there was at one point last year, this document leaked of how Google of laying out a part of their lobbying strategy. And it included about how to kind of criticize and go after one of the main policymakers in the European Commission. And it just, when that came public, it was just, I think it sort of steeled the backbone of a lot of policymakers to make the seat to go forward. They wanted to weaken this law. And I think they will continue to try and do so just through other means, whether that's in the courts or other ways.
And how might this, these future efforts to stymie the act that you just mentioned happen?
I think a lot will depend on how it's written, but I think there could be some wiggle room in how the companies have to comply. And so I imagine that there's how it's going to shake out is because this is a new law, you'll have actions taken by the regulator against a company, and then the company will appeal it, and it will be fought out in court, and these court processes can drag on and on. So I think what you're going to see is some court battles, and the courts are going to have to crystallize just how far regulators can go in using this law to go after the companies. I mean, which is ironic because one of the reasons that this law was put into place was a general frustration that antitrust enforcement was taking too long. Like, there's been a number of antitrust cases against Google, for instance, out of the European Union. And they just take years. The investigations take years, and then there'll be a court fight that takes even longer. And so there was cases that, you know, a penalty was announced in 2018, and we're still, you know, they're still winding their way through the courts. And so I think you could see something similar to that here. The courts are really going to have to sharpen the look at how this can be enforced.
Adam, in your New York Times article, you wrote that this most recent legislation, the Digital Markets Act, has kind of been coupled with another legislation that's currently in the works that might happen sooner rather than later that deals with very similar things. I'm wondering if you could walk us through that other legislation. Is that the Digital Services Act, or were you referring to a different potential act?
Yeah, so that's the Digital Services Act, which could be an agreement could be reached in weeks on that. That one is much more of a sort of the social effects of the internet. So if you think of the Digital Markets Act, it's sort of a competition focused law about how can we restore competition in the digital economy. The Digital Services Act is like, how can we restore some order to, you know, and some of the worst characteristics of the internet related to hate speech, harassment, misinformation, disinformation, things like that. And that is very difficult thing to do. But it's really interesting to see how they're trying, because, you know, in the United States, we have a tradition around free speech and the First Amendment, which really limits the ability of government to do anything in this area in terms of trying to police what can be said online. But Europe has sort of a more nuanced view around free speech, where they do think that there is room for the government to regulate it. But how far they're willing to go is an open question. And so this law will provide some sort of peek at just how far the European Union is willing to go. And I suspect it's going to be somewhat restrained while giving space for individual countries to set their own policies in this area. For instance, Germany has a very aggressive approach to policing the internet, whereas Nordic countries are less so. And so I don't think they would be able to come up with some European Union-wide approach to police speech, but they can put in place what will be requirements for social media companies and internet companies to respond to complaints and to have policies in place for sharing information about how things operate on their platform. So Facebook having to share more information about what things are trending, give researchers more access to it to see just how their algorithm works, how misinformation or other content spreads. I think it'll end up being the most significant aspects of it will be around transparency and trying to force the companies to disclose more about how their systems work so that there'll be a bit more clarity about that.
Right. And Adam, I think that's really interesting because moving across the Atlantic to the United States, we've seen calls from lawmakers and various groups for regulation of big tech here in the United States on both sides of that social effects that you just described and also the competition side. And I'm wondering, kind of, despite all of these calls for action for years, the United States and Congress has really not done much to actually regulate big tech here in America. So why do you think that has been?
There's a few different reasons why I think that is. One, I think, is just general political paralysis in the United States. I mean, you're in Washington, you have a probably better sense than I do, but it doesn't seem like it's Congress is getting many big things done right now because it's so divided. And I do sense that there is some movement in the area of like antitrust and competition. And so I'm curious to see if some of the things out of the Senate move forward, because there seems to be some momentum there. But in other areas around like speech related questions, I just don't see that happening. I don't see the United States going down that road. There's such disagreement. On the one hand, you have people on the right who think that the companies are doing too much and that they're censoring their speech. But on the other side, you see that they're not doing enough, that they're allowing too much misinformation to spread. And so I have a very hard time thinking that there would be an agreement on this. But maybe there's room in areas around competition. And, you know, the White House has been pretty aggressive thus far in at least moving in that direction. They've appointed a number of people who are notable critics of the power of big tech platforms. You have some antitrust cases moving forward against Google and Facebook. So some things are happening. It's not that nothing is. It's just in terms of like passing actual legislation and changing laws, that's been much slower going in the U.S. than in Europe.
With this passage of the Digital Markets Act, do you think that the U.S. and maybe other countries as well will be pressured to act more than they currently are?
I do think so. Just recently, the European Commission Executive Vice President Margrethe Vestager was in D.C. Meeting with officials. I think there is a more of a sense of urgency to try and do something. But again, I haven't seen the sort of big political momentum to get something done. In other countries, though, I mean, I think that what happens in Europe often serves as a model. I mean, you see with the GDPR data privacy law, Japan, Brazil, and other countries adopted policies very similar to it. And so I think you'll see something similar with respect to the Digital Markets Act, which gets back to that idea of the kind of Brussels effect. And even though Europe is not producing the kind of big tech champion companies, they are sort of a leader when it comes to regulation, you know, which some policymakers here really see as an achievement and they're really proud of. But I think there's others who work in the tech sector who think that, you know, that's unfortunate, that they wish that Europe was known more for creating world-beating companies rather than world-changing regulation.
Well, on that note, I think that's a perfect place to end, Adam. So we just want to thank you so much for your time today and coming on the podcast.
Yeah, my pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Hopkins Podcast on Foreign Affairs. We hope you enjoyed it. We would like to say thank you to the International Studies Program at Johns Hopkins University and the SNF Agora Institute at Johns Hopkins University for making this episode possible. Remember to follow us on social media at Hopkins POFA on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook for the latest and greatest of Hopkins POFA content. Hit follow on Spotify, subscribe on iTunes, and leave a rating. We'll see you next time.